What a privilege to have Gary Player here on the Biz News Briefing. Gary, we're catching you just as you end off the $1 million golf challenge. You are jetting off to the US this evening. Let's start with the golf challenge and get some scenario through your eyes.
Well, first of all, you know, this tournament goes into 180 different countries, which so this tournament, actually, I look upon it as an ambassadorial role, not only a golf tournament, because what we need in South Africa desperately is tourism. And a lot of people in the world are reluctant to come to South Africa because they don't feel it's safe. So really, the more we can do to bring tourists to the country, the better. Secondly, the money that is derived from this tournament, a lot of the profits go into the local village here, which really need help. I mean, they don't even have a bath. They allocated a lot of water. And the lady who does my massaging here says to me, she hasn't had a bath in 10 years living in this particular village. So all in all, this tournament plays a vital role. And then we get all these young fellas coming from all over the world, coming to Sun City, which is without a question of the doubt. You know, Bronwyn and I have traveled more miles than any human being ever now. And when they come here and they see this great country, South Africa, with all our wildlife, they come here and they've got a game reserve with a big fire. I mean, Sun City is the best resort on the planet. They've got two golf courses. They've got a beach. I mean, you imagine Saul Kirzner building a beach in the middle of the jungle. And so the facilities here are, they're actually astounded when they come here. So they go back and they act as ambassadors for us. So all in all, this tournament, and then to have sponsors to put up these vast sums of money, is absolutely fantastic. And all the caddies, they get jobs. It's employment. So all in all, this is it's Africa's major, and it's a very, very important today. We got the Minister of Finance attending, and we got the Minister McKenzie, our Minister of Sport, actually a very charismatic guy. I was really delighted to meet them both. And so all in all, this tournament, and you know, golf used to be a whitey sport. Golf used to be an elitist sport. Golf is no more a whitey sport at all, and it's no more an elitist. We have public golf courses. Sun City is a public golf course. So golf is growing faster than any other sport in the world. And the one thing I want to put emphasis on, South Africa gets more publicity from golf than any other sport because there's a golf tournament taking place every week of the year. And we have 10, 12, 8 guys playing in all these tournaments every week, representing South Africa the whole year round, massive galleries, all on television, and wherever I go, people remark, your fellas are so well-mannered. South Africans are a very well-mannered nation.
Gary, you've been quoted as saying that golf is the hardest sport in the world, both mentally and physically. Take me through that thinking.
Well, at school, I managed to get colors for a lot of sports and found them very difficult. And, you know, I've interviewed a lot of golfers in rugby and cricket and baseball and American football, etc. And the conclusion, they all say to me that golf is the most difficult. But the one thing about golf, it's the only sport, basically, that is play and stay. Every other sport is play and away. You get to 30 years of age. If you're a professional, you might go to 34. But think about it. All our wonderful rugby players, our Springboks, when they get to 50, Bronwyn, they're hardly going to be able to walk. These massive guys thumping each other. So it's quite a sacrifice, but it's my favorite sport to watch. But what a sacrifice. They're going to suffer like junkyard dogs as they get older. So I tell young people, play golf because it's the one sport. Here I'm nearly 90, still playing very well. Still, I'm going to America tonight to play in a golf tournament. You can't do that in other sports. And so it'll help young men in their business because companies hire young golfers that are good to play with their clients. So all in, and you meet so many people and you travel around the world and it's played in every country in the world now. So I really tell young people, play golf.
As you say, you are nearly 90, but you are still doing sit-ups at the gym on a daily basis. How have you conquered the health spectrum, Gary, to the extent that you have?
You know, I like to study. I like to read. And so I've gone around the world. And without being repetitive, I've traveled more than any human being ever. And I've gone into India and China, Singapore and America, around the world, searching for longevity because I love life. I love people. I love traveling. I love my work. And so I'm trying to reach 100. And so the conclusion was, meeting all these gerontologists, people who work on longer lifespan, they gave me 10 things to work on. And one of the most important things when I wake up is an ice bath. I get into this ice bath, which takes away inflammation and rejuvenates the cells. Number two, I sleep 9 hours a night minimum, unless I've got an appointment that's early the next morning. That's the biggest and the most important thing, and South Africans should adhere to this, is undereat 2 meals a day. These big dinners, this man in India said, Gary, you don't put petrol in your car when you park it in the garage at night. And there's a great message in that. But people have their big dinners at night and go to bed with a full stomach. Of course, they put on weight. And once you put on weight, you are starting to die. No question, unless you're a freak, your heart has to pump more. It affects your whole system. Your body cannot work in the morning to the extent it should do. So undereating is the most important thing. I laugh all day too. Laughter is the best medicine. Look at the discrepancy between laughing and feeling miserable. I mean, it's enormous. I read a lot. I have friends. I think that's important. I do at least 10 to 11 things every single day. And to live to 100, you've got to work at it. But everybody thinks it's luck. Luck is the residue of design. So I work at it very, very hard and continue to do it with great enthusiasm. And I love the exercise. I go to the gym. I still push 300 pounds with my legs. I run the treadmill at max. I do hundreds and hundreds of sit-ups, and I lift a lot of heavy weights. So, you know, it's such a great feeling to get to nearly 90 and have such vitality, such energy. It's such a thrill because most people my age are dead.
Do you go to gym every day?
I don't go to the gym every day, but I practice. If I'm not in the gym, I'm hitting golf balls. And when you take a driver and you take a full swing in your body, it's a massive exercise. And then walking on the golf course. So basically, I'm exercising every day, you could say. Yeah.
There's another element to your...
It's what you eat is the most important thing. See, I don't eat. I'm not telling people they mustn't eat this, but I don't eat touch bacon. I'm trying to eat as little bread as possible. There's not much food value in bread. I don't drink milk. I might have a little in one cup of coffee a day, never more than one. So I drink a lot of water. I take a lot of very important vitamins. So, you know, you've got to learn. You've got to study and learn what keeps you alive and what keeps you going. Because when you get sick, there's nothing worse. To live in pain is a terrible thing.
There's another element to your formula, which you talk about regularly, and that is having love in your heart. You speak about your wife, Vivian, who you were with for 72 years. And Gary, that's been formulative in your success. You mention her in so many different platforms.
Well, for the people that never knew this, I was 14, exercising in a very poor neighborhood. We were very poor. And there was a wall between me and my neighbor. And my brother was standing there. He says, come and look at this little chick here next door. So I get on the rock and I look over and I see this girl. I say, good morning. What's your name? She says, Vivian. I said, mine's Gary. She says, do you play golf? I said, I'm starting. She says, I'll pick you up on Saturday with my father because we go to a golf club every Saturday. I got off the wall. I spent 45 seconds talking to her. And I said to my brother, I'm going to marry that girl. Now, he said, are you crazy? Well, I did. And what a woman I had. And, you know, if you get a good wife, it makes a big difference. And unfortunately, we're living in a terrible world at the moment where all countries, nuclear weapons, trying to develop nuclear weapons to destroy each other, to be dominant in the world. If we could put all that amount of money into the human being and the betterment of the human being, everybody would have a job. Everybody would have a home. They'd have a decent salary to come in every week. You'd avoid absolute, you'd completely disintegrate poverty. But a weapon of nuclear destruction makes a big noise. But love is silent and makes a bigger noise. And if you can have love in your heart, if you've got love in your heart, it's amazing what it does. Things that I thought were serious when I was a young man, I realize now they weren't serious at all. And never to feel sorry for yourself. Thank God I struggled like a junkyard dog as a kid. I lay in bed for 2 years, almost every night, wishing I was dead. That's the reason I became a world champion. Adversity is the greatest medicine, the greatest tonic that the human being can have. And yet today, the problem is we're living in such a soft nature, not the entire population, but a lot of the people, and it's doing them harm. When you let your children have new shoes, sleep in white sheets, 3 meals a day, anything they want, pocket money, this, that, this and that. When you spoil them, you're doing them great harm. Now you've got to give them love, and you've got to give them discipline, and you've got to obviously do things for them because you love them. But when you go overboard and spoil them, it's going to come back and haunt you one day.
Gary, for those that don't know your story, when you say you lay in bed for 2 years and wished you were dead, if I understand it, that was at the time you were around 9 years old, you lost your mother, your father was working on a gold mine. And it's that adversity that you often point to as what drove you to be a champion, that gave you that mentality of never giving up.
Very much so. My mother died when I was 9, and I adored my mother. My father worked in the gold mine 8,000 feet underground. My brother went to war, can you believe it, at left high school, St. John's College, at 17 years of age. When I look at my grandchildren, I say they're 17, and that's the age he went to war. My sister was at boarding school. Thank goodness I went to King Edward the VII school. Let me tell you, dear listeners, that South Africa, without a question of a doubt, have the greatest high schools on the planet. If you're fortunate enough to be able to afford to send your child, your daughter, or your son to a high school in America, we're developing unique people with manners, great education, and are thriving to do well and are contributing to society. So, you know, it's an aura. Education is, I study genetics every day. I read. I mean, Winston Churchill was my all-time hero. I read about his episodes. If you can read, and today, but today children don't read. They've got a cell phone and they never read. And so parents have got to say, fine, you can have a cell phone, but you can't just have a cell phone all the time. You've got to read. Education is the light, and the world is so competitive that you better learn to read.
I couldn't agree more. I'm just thinking of my own son and daughter, and I am desperate, desperate for them to read. So I'm sure many other parents are listening to this as well and realizing that it is actually fundamental to their growth and development. And we can't give up, perhaps, Gary, on making our children read. That's the message loud and clear.
Well, you know, fortunate thing about traveling the way I have, it's been this great education to learn about other people's cultures and to have respect for their religious point of views and not be emphatic that you write all the time and to have appreciation. One of the difficulties in America in the last while has been if you say you're a Trump fan, which I am, people have become very argumentative and almost nasty, whereas I was not a Kamala Harris fan at all with her policies, her woke policies. But if they tell me about her, I listen with great interest, but also with respect. And that's the opinion. And this is something that people have got to do, is to learn to understand somebody else's opinion, because you might learn something that you didn't know.
Talk to me about Trump and what kind of man he is. You've spent time with him on the golf course.
Well, I've known him for over 30 years, and I play golf with him almost every month. In fact, I'm going to America tonight, and I'll be playing with him next week again. Actually, I found him an incredibly wonderful man. You know, the stuff I read about him, it's demoralizing. You know, I've come to the conclusion I do not believe anything I read. Well, you look on your phone. One week somebody says I'm dead. The next week they say Johann Rupert is dead. I mean, the stuff that's AI is going to be a great advantage, but a great disadvantage is stuff that can be said and done. Today, my friend, they got Donald Trump and Elon Musk marrying each other and having a baby. I mean, I don't know how sick you can get. But be that as it may. Now, I'm around Donald Trump a lot. First of all, he's going to change the world for the better. He's going to get rid of all this woke stuff. You know, in America, they have young boys cutting their testicles out at the age of 10 years of age without parental consent. He's going to stop that. He's going to stop all these people that come to America and pull down the American flag and then put up the Hamas flag and then burn the American flag and say, death to America. He said, Gary, I'm kicking them all out. President Eisenhower kicked out over 1 million people. Can you imagine somebody in South Africa coming and pulling our beautiful flag down and putting up a Hamas flag and burning our flag and saying death to South Africa? In most countries you do that, they'd shoot you on the spot. Iran, you'd be shot immediately. You know, but once you lose lack of law and order, you're in big trouble. And the thing that Donald Trump will bring back is law and order. He's not a diplomat. He says, I don't profess to be, but neither was Winston Churchill the greatest leader ever. But his principle, good education, good manners, you know, standing up, building a strong army, having discipline in school, stopping these universities with a socialist, almost anti-communist rule. Now, if you're a communist, that's your choice. I don't want to live under communism. I travel and I go to communist countries. I want to have freedom. You know, the wonderful thing we can stand, I can say on your show now that I don't like President Ramaphosa, or I do like him, and I don't go to jail. But you do that in their countries, you might not ever see you again. So we've got to realize how much freedom, what freedom means, and the way these American soldiers against in the time of Hitler, how they fought at Normandy, and people like my brother and others in South Africa and Australia and Britain, how we fought against the rule of Nazism and communism so that we could have freedom in our lives. Freedom is a very, very special, special gift. If you don't have freedom, now I tell you what, as far as I'm concerned, I don't think it's worthwhile living. And this
Gary,
man,
do you count President Trump, President-elect Trump, as one of your best friends?
I would say a very good friend of mine. And I think that if he can, and when he first became president, he said to me, you know, Gary, I don't believe in wars. He says, there will be no war under my administration. I said, Mr. President, that's not possible. Every president, there's been a war. There was no war during his reign. If he can get rid of and stop the war in Ukraine and stop the war in the Middle East, he will go down as the greatest president America has ever had. I mean, you know, it's just so sad when you think, when you've got a family like I've got, and I've got a school where 130 young black children in the go to school, thinking of that children being bombed and killed, those beautiful little black children. I mean, you know, it's barbaric. And so for him to say, I want to have no wars and stop all this woke system and coming to my country and saying death to America. But there's certain people who criticize him for that. Well, there again, it's their opinion.
How is he a good golfer?
He is not a good golfer. He's an outstanding golfer. There's no president in the history of the world that could ever come even close to him. And he's got golf courses as part of his business. And so he's a great believer in employment. And the way, now here's the thing, I've read a few editorials in our papers about him. And I say, well, I wonder if this man has ever met him. How do you form an opinion, a genuine opinion, an honest opinion, if you don't know the man? Simply by what you read. Can you believe anything you read in the world today? Nothing. So now I'm sitting there at the table with him at breakfast. He calls the lady over and says, Mary Lou, you've done a great job for my members here. Come and, African black woman, come and see me at the end of the month. I'm going to take care of you. I go outside. He brings the greenkeeper up to me. And he says, I want you to meet my greenkeeper who's doing such a great job. Children. Now, if a man loves children, you know he's a good man. The kids come to the course there. He says, sit down at my table. He signs a hat for them. He gives them all a presidential pen. He goes into the unions and he meets the guys and talks to them. I mean, you know, you've got to have compassion. You've got to have a personality. You know, there's no substitute for personal contact. And I just think he's fantastic. He's got a chance. He's got a chance to go down as the greatest president. It's a massive, massive undertaking. But if he can do that and to stop all this crazy woke system, things that are happening to children that you and I never ever thought, pornography taught at school and that kind of universities with their woke system. You know, I can't go because I'm a middle of the road man, but on the conservative side. If I'm asked to go, which I have been asked to go to many universities in the world, I wouldn't go to a university and talk. In America, even Mrs. Clinton, who's an ultra-liberal, the other day, I think it was at Columbia, I stand for correction, at Columbia University, she couldn't finish her talk. She had to get out of there with security. Unless you agree with their socialistic and their communistic ideas, they don't want to let you talk. They talk about freedom. They want you to come and talk. But when you stand up and talk, if it's not what they like, they turn your car over and they stop you talking, that's all going to stop. He's going to bring sanity to the world. Sanity.
This is such a great opportunity for our Biz News viewers, and I know that you've got a very pressing agenda ahead of you in terms of getting ready for your flight to the US. But is there anything that we haven't covered that you are going to leave this interview thinking, I wish I had spoken about?
Very much so. You know, I love this country so much. I've represented South Africa way longer than anybody in the history of our country. 73 years I've been an ambassador. I brought people to this country to invest. I've been on television more than any South African. I've been in live, appeared in front of people live way more than any South African. And this country means so much to me. I was offered $50 million to live in America and turned it down. Now, here's the thing, and I see what's happening here perturbs me. Having an open border, and that's the other thing that Trump's going to do. He's going to stop these people just pouring in there, gangsters, people with diseases, spreading fentanyl and killing 200,000 young people coming in from China. He's going to stop all that. Now, my mind works so quickly and I get upset. But the thing is, when you have an open border, now we adopted a young black grandson, two. And they say it's very hard to get a job, but other people coming in from other parts of the world can get a job. I'm all in favor of people coming into our country. Yes, as long as they do it legally with a proper visa and they can contribute to our great country, yes. But having an open border, we must have let between 20 and 30 million people in. Now, I know we had people in exile during apartheid, but we never had more than a million. Let's say we had 2 million. Bring them in, give them a home, give them a job, do anything you like and be reciprocal and be grateful and have gratitude for what they did for us. But don't let 20 or 30 million. We're a land, right now, as you and I talk, we're a land of squatter camps. These people, they come to this country for a dream. They've got no dream. I go into the squatter camps, I talk to them. They live in a tin shanty, no showers for 10 years. They never will have a shower, in fact, as long as they live there. It's ice cold in the winter. And it's boiling hot living in that corrugated iron in the summer. And they got no job. We got over 55% of people that don't have a work, a job in this country. The fact that we're letting all these people come into our country to the detriment of our own people. And that will be the failure of South Africa unless we stop it. It just, you cannot share a loaf of bread amongst 50 people. And we owe it to our people to give them a big education. To get out of a debt. How do we get rid of our debt? How do we survive when you've got an overpopulation and not sufficient income coming in? So this is, for me, the crucial thing. This determines, in my humble opinion, whether South Africa has a future or not, if we're going to do something about this. And thank goodness. And what is happening? All the cultures of the world are being ruined. France is finished. France is no Frenchman's country. France, their culture's gone, entirely gone in 20 years. Germany's culture now. Mrs. Merkel will go down in history as one of the worst leaders Germany have had. She let in 1 million Syrians, nothing against the Syrians, into her country. And it's changing her culture. And this is what's happening in England. There will be no more England in 55 years. Now you go to the Middle East, they're proud of their culture. You can't go there and build a Christian church. You can't go there and get it and marry one of their women. So we've got to look after our cultures. It's not a case of being racialistic, not liking people. I love everybody. My life is full of love. I have respect for their religions. I don't like being called an infidel because I've got respect for their religion. I don't want to be called an infidel, but so be it. So the thing is, you've got to look after your culture. Holland is on its way out. Germany is on its way out. And Trump is going to stop that. And you can't, I go to the Middle East and I work there and I build golf courses and I talk to the sheikhs and I talk to them. They say, no, we don't want to change our culture. We're Muslims and we want to remain Muslims. And so we should have the right to remain Christians and to live in our culture. Now, South Africa will never lose its culture. China will never lose its culture. America, as long as Donald Trump is to say, won't lose their culture. But the rest of the world, well, North Korea won't. Iran certainly won't, but I can tell you, in the West, it's a sad, sad thing to see. So what I'm saying, in short, We can't let people, we can't have an open border and let people just pour in. Drugs. When I was a young man in South Africa, it was very, very little drug. Now we're inundated with drugs. We're the second highest. We're catching up to Nigeria. It's going to affect your children. And everybody who's listening to me today, it's going to affect their children. So we've got to have law and order, and you can't have law and order when you have an overpopulation of other nations in your country.
Gary, finally, what does December look like for you now as you leave for the U.S.?
December? Did you say December?
Yes.
Well, I'm going to America tonight.
What does December look like? Give us a little visibility into the life of Gary Player over the next month.
Well, I'm going to America tonight, and I'm playing in a tournament called the Father-Son Tournament. And Tiger Woods plays with his son and a lot of the champions. And it's absolutely magnificent. And you play in pro-ams, and they bring all ladies and people of different colors and religions. And we all play in a pro-am and play together. But in the last month, I went to America, South Africa, South Africa, Hong Kong, Hong Kong, South Africa, now to America tonight, and then back here again one day before Christmas. So I'm living in an airplane with big time changes. But I've loved traveling, and it's been an epic journey for me, which I go in my hands and knees. Let me tell you, if I tell you the word that is most prevalent in my life is gratitude. When I see how people are living in the world and how I'm living, and I make comparisons every day, I say a prayer every day of my life, sometimes five times. Gratitude, how lucky I am. I was at dinner last night with the BMW people. They're very prolific in this tournament. And I said to them at this table, do you realize there are people in this world will never have one meal in their lives like we're having tonight? I just like to say thank you for the food. People don't worry about saying thank you. Think about it.
And I just want to say thank you, Gary Player, for joining us here on Biz News. Gary Player.
Thank you. God bless South Africa. We have such a great country with everything at our disposal. And the word Ubuntu must not die. Our father Mandela was such a wonderful human being. We got to follow Mandela's principles, and we'll go from strength to strength. Although he did like an open border policy, which I disagree. But I loved that man. Every time I was with him, and I spent 3 years with him, every time I was with him, I cried. What a wonderful man.
A perfect place to leave our discussion. Gary, again, thank you so much for your time. Really, really appreciate it.
Love to all your viewers.